Coming up this week on the Radio Today programme, we'll talk to Steve Jenner, co-author of a new book about the journey he and his brother made into radio in the 90s and the noughties. Plus, James Cridland asks whether your station is smart speaker friendly, and more great audio treats from David Lloyd in Radio Moments, including from 40 years ago this week, when there was a massive frequency shuffle across the radio dial.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
First, Radio Today's Roy Martin is with me again to start the podcast with a look at what's been big in radio this week. And as we record, we have breaking news about the appointment of a new managing director of the Radio Academy. We can exclusively reveal, other than the emails you've got in your inbox, and you might have seen it on Radio Today, that the new managing director is...
Shawnee Boy. Welcome, Shawnee Boy.
Hey, Shawnee Boy. This is Sean Childerly. Ex of Global Radio a few years ago, and has worked for Knotts TV, and he's got a commercial background, and his mission, should he choose to accept, is to run some massive events. Oh, he has accepted. Run some massive events, and also hopefully try and get Global back in the Radio Academy. Is that going to happen?
No. Good luck, Sean. You're going to need it. And we can't wait to have a chat with you here on this very programme about your impossible task ahead.
He's not even started yet, Roy. Come on, let's give him a chance. He starts in a couple of weeks' time. So good luck, Sean, if you're listening. And yeah, we'll hopefully get you on the podcast before Christmas so you can tell us about your plans for the Radio Academy.
It does look like he's a mate of Roger. So he must have had a word. Roger must have said to him, hey, mate, you don't want this gig. It's impossible. He must have said that to him. Surely.
Hey, time will tell. Let's give him a chance. Come on, Roy. Come on, Roy. Come on, Roy. Talking about giving him a chance, are we going to give Bauer a chance? Big story of the week. Bauer's latest strategy announced, and City 2 and Key 2 and Radio Air 2 and Rock FM 2 are all going to turn into greatest hits radio. What a great idea.
Yeah, if only they'd have done it 10 years ago. I mean, it makes sense now. They're finally getting on the right path with this, aren't they? But what do you think of the name? Stuart. Well, Not the name Stuart, but the name.
Well, I love Stuart. The name Stuart. I think one of the problems they might have is that they've got Hits Radio and Greatest Hits Radio, which is great. They work well together. They kind of complement each other. You've got the Hits Radio Network, which incorporates Greatest Hits Radio. But as a listener, am I going to say, oh, that one plays the hits, that one plays the greatest hits? Which one am I going to pick?
It's just all very generic. And I think Hits Radio and Greatest Hits Radio, it's like there's something missing off Hits Radio. I mean, it should be called Latest Hits, to, you know, differentiated from Greatest Hits, because hits is hits, isn't it?
Yeah, but we'll give them a chance. We'll give them a chance. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. They've not even launched the thing yet. Come on, Roy, let's be positive.
I'd have called it Gem.
It's too late, and you're not in charge of Bauer.
Oh, what a gem. They haven't done it yet. They could change their mind.
Excludes Scotland, of course, where they're keeping Forth 2 and Clyde 2 and Tay 2 and all those.
Why? As my two-year-old would say, why?
Why?
One theory I had is the Sun newspaper, the Scottish Sun, they have a radio station called Greatest Hits.
Ah,
so maybe
Scottish
they couldn't
Sun,
get the clearance
hits.
For it.
Yeah, so that's wireless, isn't it?
Yeah. Are they bothered about that? Or, I mean, they stole GHR from Grimsby Hospital Radio, so they're not that bothered about taking other people's names. So I wonder why they're not doing it in Scotland when they're doing it in England. Stu, could you find out for me?
Oh, I'll get my team on it, yes. The other thing that we perhaps need to still try and find out is what's going on in the West Midlands. So this fits in with the plan that they announced a few weeks ago about changing Absolute to a Greatest Hits Radio format. But does the Midlands one in Birmingham, the old Kerrang licence, does that need a local show because it's FM?
It does need a local show. It'll need a three-hour local show during the daytime, which they will probably have in the afternoon or mid-morning, something like that.
And the Liverpool one needs a local show as well, doesn't it?
Liverpool needs a local show, but if they're providing the breakfast show, then bingo, that's their local show.
Ah, so they do a local show, but it goes out on the network, I see, right.
Yes, people have been doing that trick for years.
Yeah. Right, well, we'll give them the chance, and it all launches in January. So we did ask them to come on the podcast, but they've not got back to us. That's Bauer, to come and tell us about their latest strategy. So we've just had a chat about it instead. But hopefully the invitation's still there if anybody from Bauer Management is listening and they want to come on next week and tell us why you're doing Greatest Hits Radio and tell us all about how great it's going to be.
Greatest Hits Radio with Simon Ross at breakfast. He's good, Rossi. I like him. He'll be good.
You've got
He'll
the
be good across
gig.
The nation. Here's a true fact, a fun fact. Simon Ross was the voiceover of the network back in the day when it was Magic. Did you know?
I didn't know that. No.
Yeah.
If only
he's very at home.
A question on Stu versus Roy. Maybe another time. Talking about being on all across the nation, Chris Evans, obviously starting at Virgin in the new year. There's loads of changes happening from January. The whole radio landscape's just going to sound completely different. But Chris Evans obviously makes the move to Virgin. And most read story of the week on Radio Today is about all the people he's taking with him from Radio 2.
Yeah, we found this out a couple of months ago, but we couldn't get confirmation. So thankfully, we've got the information up there. Pretty much the whole team, apart from Moira Stewart. She's not going. I wonder if she'll stay or she'll just leave.
Interesting to see who Radio 2 have doing their news at breakfast. But yeah, so Vassos, who's been doing the sport with Chris for 7 years, he's going to Virgin. Also Rachel Horn, who's been doing the travel news recently on Radio 2 Breakfast. She is going to do news and travel on the new show on Virgin. Ellie Davis is going to be exec producer. She's been a producer at Radio 2. Mira DiPaola is also leaving Radio 2 to go. And John Dutton as well, Radio 2's guest booker, who gets some great guests on Radio 2's Friday Breakfast Show with Chris, of course, as well as across the rest of Radio 2. He's off to Virgin as well. Big upheaval.
And a big wage bill for Wireless as well.
Yeah, and in that announcement from Wireless about the Virgin Breakfast Show, they told us as well that Sam and Amy are getting split up. So Sam is going to do early breakfast and Amy will do the late show. We had a swear of the week. What's your favourite swear of the week?
Oh, yes, this is I saw this on Radio Fail. This is Radio 1 with Little Mix. Let's see what they said.
The only person that was outraged was Piers Morgan today.
Do we want to give him any of your things? Do we just want to just like not even bother say his name?
I was just going to say, are you shocked by about him being outraged by something?
No.
It's quite weird, isn't it? Language, Jesse.
Jess.
You can't swear, Jesse. Apologies for offensive language on the BBC.
I'm so sorry.
Jessie.
The word she was looking for was idiot. There you go.
That was the word she was looking for.
They get really angry.
Do they?
I think the thing that annoys us, if people try and make a negative of something that we're trying to do that's positive,
yes.
And that's the thing that pisses... So,
Oh my God! Stop swearing, Little Mix! Oh my God!
Stop swearing, Little Mix!
Really? Twat and piss? Is that not allowed? You're not allowed to say those things on the radio these days. I do it all the time.
Not on drive time on national radio. Do you? David Cameron loves a twat, but he didn't get away with that either. Oh, no, he did get away with that.
Yeah, too many twits. I don't know whether they'll get Ofcom complaints about that, though, really, will they? Do Radio 1's audience care about a piss and a twat?
People complain about everything these days.
True. Talking of complaints, Hits Radio has had a complaint about its split-second song competition.
Exactly.
People complain about everything. So, hang on, though, this is an interesting one for a lot of people working in radio doing competitions on their shows, so... Asking people to text in and then during the song, close the lines and pick somebody to put on air with you. So it's kind of quick turnaround, only a couple of minutes window for entries. But Ofcom said they should have told the listeners exactly when the entries were going to close.
Yeah, so this has been done since commercial radio began. It's been done a billion times. I've done it, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times, as you probably have as well. Call in during the song and we'll give you the answer afterwards and put somebody on air and they can win a bus pass or something. So everybody's done it, and now all of a sudden we have to tell people, well, we don't have to, we just have to make it fair because somebody complained. So yep. Bauer's answer is, you've got 2 minutes to call in or text in, and then we're closing the lines. But that's just ridiculous, isn't it?
And in this case, there were 4 entries received after the winner had been picked, or after the player had been picked, and it weren't premium rate text messages either. So it's, you know, 40 pence maximum.
Yeah, but you're there, you say open the lines, then you take your headphones off, you put them on the table, you look at the text coming in, you see, if you're lucky, 50, 100 names coming in. About a minute later, you think, oh, there you go, I'll pick that one. And they still come in. You know, it happens every time. But now because somebody's complained, it all has to change.
Well, I find as well, I'm sure I've been in studios in situations where there's been text coming in after you've finished the competition mechanic on air. People are still trying to enter 20 minutes later. So, yeah. What do we do about those
people?
There's
no sympathy for them.
No, exactly. Well, you can read about Ofcom's judgment on that. They resolved the matter. They didn't uphold the complaint, which I suppose is a blessing. You can read about that on radiotoday.co.uk. We're going to be talking to Steve Jenner on this podcast, by the way, from High Peak Radio, and there's an interesting bit in the chat where I talk about the thing him and his brother are perhaps most famous for when they got in all the national papers, which was a competition to give away a car on an RSL back in 1999, and they had a presenter who said, "You can win a car," and ring in, and then the listener turned up to pick up their car, and it was a dinky car, it was a toy car rather than an actual car. Yeah, do you not remember that? It was all over all over the national papers like 20 years ago, and they went to court, and the judge ruled that they had to give the listener an actual car.
No way.
Yeah. So you can hear what Steve has to say about that on the podcast.
Who paid for that?
The licensees, the owners of the radio station, Steve and his brother.
Did they ever say, though, you can win a full-sized car that you can drive? Or did they just say a car? Because a car could be any size, surely.
Just said a car.
They should have got away with
that. And this, but there we are. And this was a presenter who'd the previous day given away a bag of chips. So, But no, it's an interesting chat. So have a listen. Stay tuned to the podcast because Steve will tell us about that as well as all the rest of his journey into radio. Yeah, very good. Well done this week as well to Nick Hancock, promoted to Deputy Content Director at UKRD. And well done as well to LBC for that massive Theresa May exclusive, getting her on the show with Nick Ferrari for 20 minutes. The morning everybody wanted her on the air.
Yeah, it was a good interview as well. Well done, Nick and everybody at Global for that one.
And Tony Global, Hold Separate is back. You enjoyed writing that headline, I guess.
Hashtag Hold Separate. It's interesting going through the hashtag on Twitter. Some comedy moments on there. So Global now going through it with new purchase. Nothing to do with radio, thankfully. So, hopefully it won't take 2 years like the GMG deal did.
So you're at the Audio Production Awards later this week. There'll be coverage of that on radiotodaylive.com.
Yeah, if you're listening to this on Friday, I was there last night and it was fantastic. Other events coming up include Vox this weekend in London. Have fun if you're going to that. I wish I was going. Radio TechCon is on Monday. Also wish I was going to that as well, but we've got a team there covering it for you. And the big digital event in December, the Christmas event to celebrate digital radio, is happening on the 11th of December. And then the day after that, the 12th, is the Radio Academy AGM, which should be quite interesting. And lots more coming up into January and March as well next year. If you'd like more details, radiotoday.co.uk/events.
Fabulous. Thank you, Roy. And it was nice to go on our little geek trip to Spire FM last week as well. I was down in the south. We went on a tourist day out to Salisbury, everyone, to see the world-famous 123-metre spire on the cathedral. And while we were in town, we happened to pop in to see the guys at Spire FM. So thank you for letting us have a little look.
Yeah, very anarchy. And we didn't go away empty-handed, did we? What did we get?
We got reusable coffee mugs with Spire FM.
That's
branding.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I've not seen since because the wife stole it to use at work. It's gone.
I took mine to work with me, so there's a picture of me with a Spire FM coffee mug in the Five Live studio on my Twitter, at Stuart Clarkson, if you want to have a look.
Very good. I think I missed that one, but I'll go and look now. I'll do it. I will.
Stay there. Steve Jenner is coming up. It's a fascinating interview. You'll love that. And still to come, David Lloyd and James Cridland on the Radio Today program.
Broadcast Bionics brings you Phone Box, Oasis, Virtual Director, and many more innovative solutions for creative radio people. Come to bionics.co.uk and find out more.
It is the Radio Today programme, and I'm delighted to say we've got the author of a new book about radio on the podcast this week. Welcome to the show, Steve Jenner.
Hi, Stuart.
So, Steve, you've written a new book all about, you've co-written a new book with your brother all about getting into radio. And for anybody who doesn't know you, one of the founding directors, along with your brother and a few others, of High Peak Radio. But the story kind of takes us right up to the point of you winning that licence. sense, and there's a kind of a lot of history behind it, doing a lot of RSLs and trial broadcasts and even a bit of pirate radio. But right back at the beginning, you two brothers growing up very into music, but perhaps didn't see radio as something you were going to do.
I think we sort of maybe did. I mean, as I say, when we were about 11, 12 years old, when I was, or when Paul was a very small kid, because he's younger than I am, amazingly, Jeremiah, we were just playing cards one day, and we were listening to Luxembourg coming in on the crackling fade, and I kind of had this sort of Road to Damascus moment. You know, what happens if we get an old Ford, drive it up the nearest, and sort of the car battery and stuff like that? I was 11. That's ridiculous. And, you know, and both of us were DJing from the point where I was 14 and Paul was about 10. We were doing live gigs and stuff. I guess it was always in the DNA. I'm not quite sure why.
This is kind of a suburb of Nottingham where you were growing up. So at the time, there was a couple of local radio stations to listen to. Radio Trent was around as you kind of got a bit older, but opportunities for getting into radio were quite hard. You say you listen to Luxembourg and Caroline and things like that, but it never felt like something that could be run from your street or an area where you were.
That's right. I mean, we grew up in a mining town in North Nottinghamshire, and there was a very distinct social divide between people who did this kind of stuff and people who didn't. There was that kind of enormous distance between the electronic media and ordinary folks, you know, and that looked unbridgeable from the distance that we were at. And indeed, opportunities were for few and far between. Either you got in with the BBC, which meant you had a particular type of profile at the time, or you kind of didn't. So Radio Trent was a massive encouragement to us. Of course, it was one of the first commercial radio stations in the country on 301 medium wave. And when we heard that, it was just one of those moments where it kind of went, well, that's changed things a bit, that has. It's possible to do this if you're not, you know, one of the BBC's favoured children, which we weren't.
Both quite successful as mobile DJs, and obviously Paul carried on that career long after you got a proper job and went into teaching. But through university and all that kind of stuff, it was, you know, out there with the wheels of steel every night.
Oh yeah, it was. And even when I was teaching, some weeks I was doing sort of 5-6 gigs a week on top of that, because that was the days when, you know, you do your bit, you know, you tick the books and away you go, kind of thing. It's a lot different now. You just couldn't do it, and indeed it became much harder to do that as time went by. But at the time, I was kind of I was driving a race car, and I'd got a boat and stuff like that, and you know, it's quite an expensive lifestyle, and you kind of got to work 60 hours 70 hours a week or not do it. So that's what I elected to do.
And reading the book as well, as I have been doing over the last couple of weeks, it seems like you've got plates spinning all over the place, because as you talked about, you obviously went in and got a teaching job and worked at a secondary school for many years, and rising up to managerial positions within that as well, but all the time.
Right.
At some point, it's running kind of 4 or 5 radio stations in a year as well. That's no mean
feat. Yeah, that's right. And of course, that entailed a lot of travel as much as anything else. You were just on the road just all the time. And there were times where, you know, I'd wake up and I literally would not know where I was. All I'd know is there's music playing. And that became incredibly disorientating. It took me a while to get over that one, really. And also, I got into radio via pirate radio, whereas we all know it's wrong and bad and all the rest of it. Because of the lack of opportunity, it was the only way at the time to break in. There was no community radio and so forth. And so I was doing that at the same time as teaching. Well, that's an incredibly risky thing to do. And I was very aware of the risks at the time, and I only just got away with it.
And this was Horizon Radio in Nottingham, yeah?
Yes, it was. Spectacularly successful pirate radio station, playing a lot of kind of European and dance sort of hits, kind of the upfront dance mix, I suppose you call it. And, you know, it certainly taught me a lot. It taught me a lot. And I think anyone who's done pirate radio, you know, going way back to the 60s, will tell you that whatever the rights and wrongs of it are, it did teach a lot of the people involved an awful lot of things.
Yeah, and those skills you then put to use as Horizon went legal with an RSL, but you came very close to a meeting with the DTI, which you detail in the book as well, a lucky escape.
Oh, yes, and I was saved literally by a security guard on the door to the block of flats we were broadcasting from the top floor, and had he not just shook his head in a particular way and I turned on my heel, then the collar would have been felt, and it would have been a very short book.
And I think, as you say, you didn't really realise you could buy a 28-day licence at this point, so you were doing the pirate radio thing, and they went, well, let's try doing it legally and see if we can make some money doing it. And from being involved with that RSL, you got this bug to start your own stations all over the place.
Well, that's right. I'm actually writing another book at the moment about the development of pirate radio in the city of Nottingham. And it's amazing. The number of people I've spoken to have risen to fairly significant positions in the radio industry who said that at the time they didn't actually understand the fact that, one, it was illegal, and two, that you could actually do it legally if you followed another course of action. I must admit, now, there came a point where this was made clear to me, and my jaw just bounced off the floor. I couldn't believe we were continuing to take these enormous risks when there was, or an admittedly difficult, but an alternative.
Yeah, so you kind of became an RSL licence holder, and I think, was it May 1996, the first one that you did of those, where you came up with this idea, you and Paul, to run a station in your hometown in Hucknall.
Yeah, so a little bit of go for what you know. Paul had been working the patch fairly solidly as a roadshow DJ, and he, because of that, a load of the local business people knew who he was and liked him anyway. And I just suggested to him at a family barbecue, you'd be ideal to actually sell and market this. And he kind of looked at me in that kind of gone out what sort of way, and sure enough he proved to be an absolute natural at it straight away, and he worked very hard at it as well. And I think really that was when things started to take off for us, once we realised that if you focused on a small town or a series of small towns in a fairly tight geographical area, and you focus on the really local matters, if you like, sort of micro-local, if you like, then it derived benefits to all concerned. There were great social benefits as well as commercial benefits, and you could make it sustain as long as you stayed true to that and didn't wander too far from it.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of people doing RSLs in the 90s were doing RSLs as trials for upcoming licences that were going to be awarded by the radio authority, but you kind of went for let's make some cash at this rather than necessarily thinking for the long term, certainly in Hucknall and Ilkeston and places like that.
Well, yes, to start with, the Hucknall one was a serious attempt to create a community licence before the notion actually existed. That was an attempt to set up a full-time station in the area, but it became clear from the radio authority's priorities that was not going to happen. It was not an area that was ever going to end up on a working list until many years later community radio had diversified to the way that it had. So, yeah, we had to kind of make a decision then as what we're going to do. And we had one strategic objective, you know, one if we were working to for a full-time licence, but we had a number of smaller licences, RSLs off of that, which basically were potboilers, which created the income to enable us to have a pitch at a full-time licence, which is an expensive business, especially if you lose.
Yeah, and talking of which, up the road in Chesterfield, that was your first stab at going for a proper licence. As you detail in the book, there's a lot of work involved in pulling a licence bid together, which people perhaps who've never applied for one, people kind of working in radio now because licences aren't really awarded anymore, FM licences. It's a kind of art of putting that together, that licence that doesn't exist anymore.
No, it was a beauty contest, in effect. And it was a case of trying to put your best foot forward in a 60 to 80 page document. Now, there is a very particular way of doing this. We were doing this towards the end of that period. As you say, the High Peak licence was the last one, I believe, last local commercial licence offered in mainland England, as I recall. Now, because it was late model, the whole thing had developed to a very, very specific kind of idea, very specific model which you had to kind of develop. So the opportunity to actually make yours stand out from others was very, very narrow, and that's what we tried to work.
And with Chesterfield, you obviously lost out on the licence, and that was quite a setback for you for all that work that you'd put in and all the trials and the RSLs you've been doing working up to that point of trying to get your hands on a full-time licence.
Well, that's right. I mean, if you'd had serious sort of backing from a trade backer who had got very deep pockets and was prepared to invest thousands of pounds of risk capital, generally speaking, you were kind of okay. But we're a bit like a band that had been offered enormous advance by a record company, and then you spend the rest of your life paying it off. We actually funded the whole exercise, and we finished about, I think it's about £18,000 down after the Chesterfield licence race. And that's a lot of money if basically one of you's a teacher, one of you's a mobile DJ, and you're worried about how to pay the electric bill, you know.
Yeah, I think the thing that strikes me, though, is both yourself and Paul and the way you come across is that you just never give up. And that is where you then, you know, had a drive about, thought, oh, how about here instead? And you just found somewhere else to go and give it a go. And you kind of reset and started again. A lot of people, after the experience you'd had of being, you know, knocked back for a license, would kind of give up and go back to the day job, I guess.
We very nearly did. And to be honest, we were running out of road. Pretty much after, as I say, after the High Peak licence, that was more or less your lot, unless you wanted to move into community radio. We really didn't like the idea of that particular model. So Newark, for example, we developed that, done a lot of broadcast there. That could have been an area which we could have developed, you know, at a later stage. But by the time we'd gotten round to that, Ofcom came in and had decided that be offered as a community licence, thereby making it something which we wouldn't be interested in making a pitch for. So, yes. We could have ragged it in after Chesterfield. We did carry on. I'm delighted that we did. But, you know, we were running out of road. We were drinking in the Last Chance Saloon when we came to High Peak.
You found Buxton, and almost straight away there's this realisation of this untapped market and this kind of close-knit community. And it's great to read the kind of stories of the local people and the local businesses really getting behind you on those first RSLs that you did, which I think were about 99, were they, in Buxton?
That's right. The first one started in 99, that's right, and the last one in 2001, I believe, yeah.
You talk about how, you know, thousands of people just descended on the porter cabin where you were broadcasting from on the last night of the broadcast. That's kind of unimaginable.
It was. I've never seen anything like it before or since. For about sort of a 6 or 7 day period, you felt like you're in a number one band, but only for a 10 mile radius. You know, it was literally a case of, in a particular place, you know, you'd have people walking up to you in the streets and shaking your hand off, and yet, you know, you'd go home and nobody knew who you were. You couldn't get arrested. So it was that strange feel. It really was surreal. And on the night of the final night of that first broadcast, to see people walking up, because we're more or less on a conical hill by the town hall, to see people walking up in waves carrying boxes of biscuits and boxes of beer and this and that, and just, I've never seen anything like it. It really was a deeply moving experience. It really was.
And a couple of people in the industry, when I've mentioned that I was going to be talking to you, kind of said, oh, you've got to ask him about this. And it is something you kind of reference quite a few times throughout the book, and perhaps something that you and Paul are infamous for within the radio industry. So was this on the first trial in Buxton, or was it on the second one? I can't remember.
It was on the first trial. It was at the end of the first week. It was the weekend between the two weeks we were on. If there's a blue plaque on a wall somewhere on my house at some point, it's going to mention the car. I know this.
Yeah, so this is a
Renault Clio or something.
This is a DJ who's, you know, giving away a bag of chips, and he's giving away all sorts of silly things, and decides he's going to give away a car. And actually, when the listener turns up to collect their car, it's a little model car.
That's absolutely correct, and at no point was this mentioned, and it wasn't. You know, we've listened to the tapes through a number of times, as you can imagine, as did the radio authority. And yes, that is absolutely correct. That did happen, and we were taken to court over the matter, and the judge decided at the end of the day we did indeed owe the listener a car, which we duly provided.
And not only provided the car, but all the legal costs for their lawyers as well. So a big hit that you took on it.
Yeah, do you mind if I just burst into tears now?
Yeah, let me get my violin out.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Yeah, it seriously was. It nearly did for us, to be honest. You know, we'd reached a point where we'd broken every pot we got, and our parents had remortgaged their house to help us out and all this kind of... And you know, it was very, very difficult, but it's... To an extent, you kind of go, well, okay, the listener got their car in the end, and the publicity that generated, we're literally front page of the Nationals, you know, or the Guardian, the Daily Star, and all this kind of thing. And it's almost like no publicity is bad publicity within certain parameters. It felt like horrible publicity at the time, and it felt like a horrible situation, which it was. You wouldn't choose that to happen. I certainly wouldn't do it again. And indeed, I didn't do it in the first place. You know, really, this was something which happened without our full knowledge and understanding of what had actually transpired. We wouldn't have sanctioned that in the first place. But, you know, it was... shall we say, a learning experience, yes.
But I suppose it highlights how, even if you're running a radio station, whether it's a trial or a full-time one, you're putting your trust and your life in the hands of the silly DJ who's going to try and make a name for themselves. So
you're more or less at the held to ransom by the next word a presenter says. You are, all the time. And fortunately, what I did notice about the main difference between a full-time professional setup and one which was a temporary, where a lot of staff are volunteers, is you do at least have some control over the professional standards which you set within a full-time permanent station. With a temporary station, especially one that's some way away from where a lot of these people lived, including ourselves, then you had to brief people. You had to set them up with what the parameters are and then just trust to an extent to common sense and their experience. And for the vast majority of the time, I would say for the rest of the time, that worked. And okay, this happened to us. It could have happened to absolutely anybody, because you cannot legislate for human stupidity.
And you, again, quite honourable in taking the hit yourselves and not suing the individual who'd, you know, said what he said on air and gave away the car. And that was quite an interesting thing that you and Paul chose to do.
I think pragmatic as well, to an extent, but thank you all the same.
I think there was some worry, obviously it hung over for a couple of years while you were waiting to come to court and that kind of thing, there was some worry that it was going to upset the radio authority when they're considering the licence application that you then got in for High Peak, but it wasn't to be the case.
Well, to this day, I don't know the extent of the negative effect that had, because, you know, the radio authority at the time, it never had to apologise and it never had to explain itself and it never had to say it was sorry. So you never really found out exactly the effect of any particular thing you did. It's not going to have helped, is it? But I think because we tried to behave properly and react properly under the circumstances, if I had my time again, that's probably what I would do. I think they look at that and see how you react. Things go wrong in radio. And when they do, it's often a case of what you do rather than what happened in the first place.
Obviously, the book comes to an end as you win the licence in High Peak, paving the way for part two, which is a good idea there. Leave them hanging. Leave the reader hanging.
Yeah, quick spoiler alert there.
spoiler alert, the station's still going, you know, 15 odd
years
later.
Yes, like, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So obviously, Buxton and Glossop and Chapel Owner Frith and all the kind of areas of High Peak, you've now added to that licence, made it a much bigger one over the last 7 or 8 years as well, adding Ashbourne and Uttoxeter. So your empire continues to grow.
Well, that's right. So what we did was, if you remember what happened in Derby, basically Derby was an opt-out, a 24-hour, 365 days a year opt-out of the Nottingham licence. And that's the route we went down in order to create Ashbourne Radio in 2008, which we then extended a transmitter in Wirksworth and one in Uttoxeter. So that's how that came about, and that's been a really good thing, a really good thing.
As a small local radio operator, obviously there's been something topical the last couple of weeks about small local radio and the struggles it faces. We all know how the big boys are doing very well with their big brands, thank you very much, but how is it day to day at High Peak Radio these days?
It's fine. We continue to turn a modest profit, and we continue to pay the staff, and we continue to do our stuff, and we continue to be happy little people, and we continue to be able to serve the area which we chose to serve, and in that we are happy. It's not easy. It's become more difficult due to external factors we have no control over, and I do welcome David Lloyd's report recently on the relationship between community radio and small commercial radio. The analogy I draw is, if you're a really big operator, shall we say global or something like that, and you've got a community station which is doing quite well on your doorstep, then it's a bit like being bitten by a flea. If you're us, it's a bit like being bitten by an alligator. And, you know, it's all to do with relative scale. And I don't think necessarily that Ofcom have paid due attention to that and the effect which that has on small commercial operators.
And it's good to see so many years on that yourself still involved doing shows and helping run the station, and Paul day to day as well is running the place. So
yeah, that's right. Paul's managing director. I just sort of get in the way with style. And that's what I'm doing now, really.
Have you found writing the book and kind of reliving some of those old things? I think we'll explain that the way you've written it, you've co-written it with Paul, so there are some chapters you write, some he writes, and you kind of pick up from each other and cover the same ground sometimes, but it's an interesting model of way of writing.
Yeah, well, we do actually sometimes go over the same ground, but from a slightly different perspective. The thing is, people always say to us, oh, you and Paul, you sound exactly the same, can't tell which one it is when you're on the radio. And we sort of fell into the trap of thinking, so we're going to write the same as well. I started writing this about 4.5 years ago, and Paul all came in about 2.5 years ago when I kind of thought, it's daft this. I'm writing half a story. I've not got his perspective. So I invited him to sort of join in with it. And the second the writing started turning up, I thought, well, one, this is hilarious and I'm glad he's done it. And I'm really glad that's one of my better decisions. And secondarily, what struck me is how very different our voices are. It's almost you don't need the trick of using italic print, which we do, to differentiate for the reader who's saying what. But straight away, there is a very different voice and a very different perspective. And I like that. I think it gives different texture to the book, yeah.
You can tell you've been an English teacher. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
Oh, thank you. I tell you what, I've still made some cracking typos. I managed to miss an apostrophe in the last 3 lines. Ooh. Well, given I spent years working for the Plain English Campaign, protecting the honour of the apostrophe on the BBC's red sofa and so forth, I find that absolutely heartbreaking.
And all the kids you've taught over the years as well, be keen to get the red pen out and point that out to you, I guess.
I know.
I know, it was nice to see some of the normal life as well, and there are some stories of, you know, bad days at work in the day job as well in there. So it's more than just a book about radio. It's a book about two brothers, and it's a book about kind of doing plenty of things in your life as well as trying to hold down a family and a day job. So I think people will enjoy reading it.
Stuart, thanks very much indeed. That's we try to sort of give it that kind of angle. One of the slight problems is you don't quite know whether it's fish, fowl or flesh when you pick it up. You know, is the book about the radio? Well, yes, it is. Families? Well, yes, it is. It's a lot of things, because really that's life, isn't it? No one can completely separate their professional life from their personal life, from the things they aspire to do. It's all this sort of mess, and life is messy, and really that's one of the things. I think if anything we come down to at the end of this is that is a sort of, we've just enjoyed a really joyful mess which eventually achieved the objective it set out to do, and in that I am happy.
And I know you've been promoting it locally, and people can buy the book locally in High Peak, but they can also get it online if they want to as well, I guess.
Well, that's right. It's www.broadcastbrothers.co.uk. That's broadcastbrothers.co.uk. And at the moment, we're offering a free postage, packing and payment processing deal on that. And it's £14.99 all in.
Perfect for Christmas. Thank you, Steve. Thanks for coming on. Nice to catch up with you.
Thank you, Stuart.
Interesting stuff. That was Steve Jenner from High Peak Radio talking to me. James Cridland is here in just a minute. First, a quick word about Clean Feed. If you haven't used it yet and you've got a Christmas OB coming up in a couple of weeks' time, it might be worth giving it a go and using it for your live broadcast. If you're doing OBs, interviews with somebody down the line, co-hosting a show from somewhere different to normal, outside of the studio, Clean Feed has been designed for people in radio and for podcast as well, and it's really simple to connect live, decent quality audio over the web in your browser. It doesn't cost you anything to get started. It'll just take you a minute or so to get signed up, and you'll be doing your first live interview or that Christmas OB from Santa's Grotto within a few minutes. You can find out more at cleanfeed.net.
At james.crid.land, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, checking your speakers really are smart. I'm swearing at my smart speakers a little this week. I have a few Google speakers in the house, including a Google Home Hub, the one with the little screen on it. Now, that is great as a radio from my point of view, since it's got a decent-ish speaker on it, better for voice than music. It's good for radio, since it's got a good big screen that contains a logo and the station's name. To aid recall, if anybody asks me what radio station I'm listening to, or even worse, asks me to write it down. I also have an Amazon Alexa, which at the moment is on my desk for testing things, but is normally outside. I use these devices to listen to the radio as well as to other things, and it's normally a simple job. Listen to blah, blah, blah normally works. And sometimes you have to ask for blah, blah, blah on TuneIn to give it a nudge that it's really a radio station. Listen to ABC Radio Brisbane, I ask it, and it dutifully tunes in. Listen to BBC Radio 2, and it works just the same. Listen to 4ZZZ, however, well, not a chance. 4ZZZ is one of my local community radio stations. It plays a decent mix of music, has a wide variety of programmes, a decent local news service in the morning, and all in all is a lovely listen when I can get the speakers to play it. 4ZZZ is pronounced that way, 4ZZZ here in Australia, and that's the incantation I would like to give the speaker, but that...
I can't find 4ZZZ on Spotify, but you can ask me to play it on one of your other apps.
Fails. 4ZZZ would be the most obvious next step.
Playing ZZZ on Spotify.
That doesn't work either. 4ZZZ does work on the Google Smart Speakers.
streaming 4ZZZ from TuneIn.
The smooth-sounding Australian Google voice says, so it doesn't understand 4ZZZ, but it says it is confirmation. Okay. And I still don't understand how to do it with the Amazon Echo.
I couldn't find 4ZZZ on TuneIn.
I asked Amazon support about it a month ago, since 4ZZZ is listed in TuneIn, and they responded agreeing it's a problem and that they've escalated it to a senior engineer. And now when I've just tried it, it does seem to work. Kind of.
4Z from TuneIn.
Alexa. 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 Stop. So if you work for a radio station, pop down to your local electrical store and check how easy it is to get your station on a smart speaker. It might surprise you. And then work out how you're going to fix it. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. Now, on the Radio Today programme, here's David Lloyd.
Radio Moments.
Some radio farewells these days seem to last for months. Others are swifter.
Hello. Capital Breakfast, Friday morning. I'm Johnny.
I'm Lisa. Remember to listen to Capital. This weekend, you could be winning Rihanna's new album, Talk That Talk. I want this album. You're also going to get Rihanna's entire back catalogue, and you could be joining Capital next time we interview her.
I'd love to check out her whole back catalogue.
She's got a big back catalogue.
You get me?
Hits, baby.
Okay. I've selected the first 30 minutes of music for Roberto's show. They've let me do that. It's cool. You're going to love it. It is Friday, gang! Have a cracker!
Johnny Vaughan in 2011 had his sudden final breakfast show on Capital in London after 7 years. Another final show this week, 35 years ago, Kenny Everett concluded his Radio 2 spell. It sounded like this on that station.
You can hear the rest of that at your local discotheque. Did you know that Thursday the 24th of June is also the launch of the Eggs Information Bureau, a special office set up by the government for the use of the public, caterers, educationalists and traders who want to know about eggs. You can learn more about these strange objects and where they come from at the Savoy Hotel. Contact Mrs. Jane Howard at the Eggs Authority. 01-831-6131.
Kenny on Radio 2. We used to be quite attached to our frequencies. It was the only way listeners could find us back in those analogue days. So when frequencies changed, listeners could lose their way. It's 40 years this week since some huge frequency reorganisation in the UK. It affected some commercial stations, some moving just a kilohertz or two. But for the BBC, it was a huge sort out. Let's dip in around the networks. Here's Radio 3.
Next week, as part of the general frequency changes, Radio 3 will be moving on medium wave from 464 metres to 247 metres. Our VHF position remains unchanged. Now, if you're listening to us now on medium wave, and you want to discover where we're going to be, I hope these next 5 minutes will help.
Okay.
You should by now have one of the little cards with stickers on. You can peel off one of those marked with a 3 and be prepared to stick it on your dial at the point where Radio 3 will be after the 23rd. Now, your set may be marked in metres or it may be marked in kilohertz. Metres measure wavelengths and kilohertz are the measurement of frequency. Look carefully at where you're tuned now on medium wave. If your set is one marked in metres, it'll be just over halfway between 400 and 500 metres. We're actually on 464 metres, so that's just over halfway between 4 and 500.
Got that, yes.
Now, you'll need to tune down
past
400, past 300, to just over halfway to 200.
Got it.
The new wavelength is 247 metres.
All right.
Now, in a moment or two, we'll let you hear what's going on there on Radio 1, so you can hear what to tune to.
Are we sure we've got through to Radio 3 listeners? I think we have. We've got to dip in again, though, shortly, for that that Radio 1 sampling. Here we go.
So if everybody's happy, on 247 metres and 1215 kilohertz at the moment, this is what's going on.
I've been singing with my baby. Take me home tonight.
Right, that's what's going on Radio 1 on 247 metres, 1215 kilohertz now. So that's what to tune along for.
And of course, on long wave, where Radio 2 had been, up pops Radio 4.
Good morning from me, David Simons. This is BBC Radio 4. I hope you enjoyed our new opening music. From today, we now broadcast on these frequencies, VHF FM in England and 1500 metres 200 kilohertz, serving the United Kingdom.
And poor old Radio 1 didn't have FM back then, but they did have rather better AM frequencies at last.
Good morning, this is BBC National Radio 1 on its new frequencies of 275 and 285.
Dave Lee Travis.
Yes, indeedy, it's a very good morning to you on the first day of the big changeover. How are you this morning? Okay, I hope. It's 3 minutes after 7 o'clock.
275 and 285.
Woke up one morning, turned my radio on. Didn't know where DLC or Simon had gone.
And thinking about songs to commemorate the occasion, we've got to play a bit of this, haven't we? From the King Singers.
Radio 2. Brackets in kilohertz, close brackets, will be on 693 and 909, which is in wavelengths 433 and 330. Radio 3, as you might expect, will be different from the others, in that there is no choice of frequency and no alternative wavelength.
Stations move frequencies this week in 1978. And at the same time, 40 years ago, Scotland got its full radio service at last.
Well, this is a gala night for radio. In fact, a new era of broadcasting in Scotland started today with the birth of Scotland's first national radio station, the new Radio Scotland on 370 metres and VHF. And tonight, here in the arena of Glasgow's Kelvin Hall, we celebrate our opening night. Some of Scotland's best-known entertainers are contributing their talents to a programme which will reflect the style of music and comedy output from the new Radio Scotland. Andy Cameron and Tom Ferry are both hosting their own shows on the new network. Tom with his mid-morning music show from 11:05 to 12:30 on weekdays, and Andy Cameron will be bringing you his show and his joint on Sundays from 12 until 2.
BBC Radio Scotland beginning this week in 1978. So, with power becoming galaxy on the south coast this week 10 years ago...
Hello you! We start the weekend early with Alex Party and Pink.
Mark Goodyear finishing the top 40 16 years ago.
That's after we played the 50th anniversary number one, Christina Aguilera with Redman.
The death of John Timpson 13 years ago.
Good morning from John Timpson in Brighton.
The launch of Radio Merseyside 51 years ago.
My name is Michael Hancock, station manager of Radio Merseyside, and we're broadcasting from the heart of Merseyside, from Commerce House, Liverpool.
And the debut of Trax FM in Bassetlaw 20 years ago.
Hits and memories for Doncaster and Bassetlaw. This is Trax FM.
Those are this week's radio moments.
Our happy 20th to Trax FM. Thank you, David. Thanks to this week to James Cridland, Roy Martin, and my main guest, Steve Jenner. Thanks to you for listening, especially those of you who listen right to the very end. And we know that some of you do, don't we, Roy? Because we met Pat Sissons at Spire FM the other week, and he told us that he does.
And I'm still here, still hanging on for dear life. Can I go now?
Yes. So let us know you're listening. If you made it right to the end, tweet us at Roy Martin or at Stuart Clarkson at Radio Today, and use the hashtag Secret Sausage so that we know you're a loyal listener and you stick with us right
what?
To the end. I know. Why not?
Are we going to get loads of Secret Sausage hashtags sent to us now?
Hopefully.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.